food forager.
Changing the way the world eats
by making ethical easy.
That sounds like a very good idea.
Fair food forager.
It's the Fair Food Forager and Friends show with Paul Hellier. Chats brought to you by the Fair Food Forager app. What's that, I hear you say? Well, it's a sustainable food directory that includes its own social media. It's not full of trolls and bad news. It's about bettering ourselves and being good to the planet. Whatever that means to you, growing and cooking food or just appreciating the environment around you. And just really making others feel good. This is part two of my chat with Costa Georgiadis, where we really get into the storytelling and how he weaves his magic, motivating others and recognising everyone's part in these stories. We also go into the coronavirus, downtime task catch-ups and toilet paper hang-ups. Costa has a great way of articulating complex social situations and in an understandable mate chit-chat, and I personally love the way he explains things. Again, Costa's beard rubs on the lapel mic, but nevertheless, this is a great chat. Here is Costa Georgiadis for round two. Speaking of tapestry, like you're running around everywhere speaking to different people all the time. It always blows my mind, how do you keep track of... You remember people's names, and you're talking to 12 people in 6 minutes, and then they all want you to come and visit their garden or school or something. So how do you keep track of that?
Yeah, it's funny. I was in where was I the other day? Oh, Brisbane. Yeah, the Brisbane Garden Expo, and this little boy came up to me and said, oh, you used to teach my daddy at gymnastics. And this was down here at my local RSL youth club. And I said, oh, what's your name? And he told me the name. And I said, because when he first said gymnastics, I go, what do you mean gymnastics? In Brisbane, I don't know anything. And they said, you used to teach him gymnastics. And I was going, what, RSL youth club? And they said, yeah. I said, what's your daddy's name? And they told me the name. And I said, oh, he's got a brother then. I said, yeah, I used to teach him. And, you know, we're talking some decades ago,
yeah.
when I was like a youth leader.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I was a youth leader instructor, when I was like 18 or 15 to 18, you know, and he was in like the under sevens.
Yeah.
And now that was his son. Right.
Yeah.
Coming up to me and saying he used to teach my dad. So I don't know, when people are really into what they're doing, I'm into it because I like to see people that are into stuff.
Mm.
So then that agitates me. It stirs me.
Mm.
And then I will remember stuff because I go, oh, that's right, you're the and you know, sometimes people will come up to me and go, Costa, you know, I'll go, bit of sort of spinning wheel on the computer. I'm just going, I'm downloading, spinning, have a look at that face, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 faces. And then they go, you don't remember me. I go, just for this second I don't, but context. And they go, I'm in Penguin in Tasmania. And they go, oh, Walkerman in Cairns. And I go, that's right. I said, you were in the permaculture design course with me. And you actually lived in Townsville at the time. You were going out with that guy who did all that work for carbon credits. And they go, yeah. And I go, oh, it's Rochelle, isn't it? And they're like, how do you remember that? And I go, well, we were together. Like, you know, we were engaged in that event or... You know, you were the coordinator of that sustainability event in Griffith. They go, yeah. And I said, wasn't it an Italian dinner we had up on the top of the lookout? Yeah, yeah. And I said, I remember talking and the band was there and the pizzas were all coming out and the band was playing and they asked me to get up and sing. And they go, shit, how do you remember all that? That was like 10 years ago. And I go, because I suppose it's when I'm somewhere.
Mm.
Like I don't.
You're not
I really don't like, and look, for people wanting to communicate sometimes, that can be a bit of a problem because
I don't want to be in the middle of something with my head down answering things about where I'm going to be tomorrow or next week or next month because then I may as well not be there.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I will take everything in. And I will appreciate the effort that goes in and I'll just be there. And then when that's done and I'm moving, well, once that bow is tied and I'm either at the airport or in my car driving off down the highway, then I can start, once I've let everything settle, and just go, wow, you know, that was amazing, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then I can start to think about where I'm going. But even then, probably some of the most downtime is when I'm not where I've been and I'm not where I'm going. And that could be sitting at an airport or being on a plane or being on a train or being in transit and that's that chance to just be neither here nor there. But, yeah, probably to answer the question, it's just because I want to be where I am. And
were you always like that, or was that a conscious decision that you to keep track of things you needed to do that? Because it is very hard to be like you're passionate about what you're doing, you're loving what you're doing, but it'd be very hard not to be thinking about, oh, I've got to do this tomorrow and this on Thursday and this on Friday. And
yeah, I suppose when I put something in the diary, I go, right, that's it, I'm coming, that's it. I'll think about it when it gets a bit closer or if I don't need to, you know. And I suppose the other thing I'm very conscious of is, you know, if I'm going somewhere to do community-based stuff, it's not about coming with a pro forma prepared script. It's got to be about what's the pulse here, what's going on. I'm reading between the lines from the time someone starts talking to me about the event. And then I'm thinking about the event, but just in the background.
Yeah.
You know, and if they want me to talk about this, you know, I'm just letting it roll along. And then when I get there, I meet, get a pulse, find out what's going on. I mean, but that's sort of something that I've worked at to sort of find out where things are at and do that little bit of homework and understand. And then once I've got a rough picture, then I go, okay, well, yeah, I'm going to this community in central Queensland or I'm going to this community in outer Melbourne. And again, it comes down to what I was saying before about who are you talking to? Not, oh, there's my PowerPoint for talking about sustainability at a council gathering. I mean, I'd be done in a month.
Yeah,
if I did it like that.
So most of it's just you're winging it. You're there. You know what they're.
Well, I wouldn't say winging.
Not winging it, but you're planning it.
Yeah.
In the moment, almost like.
I suppose I'm.
You've got an idea.
I'm getting a brief, you know, and I get a lot of information up front when the event's going. I see who else is speaking. What's going on? What's the plan? What are they going to be doing? What's going on here?
Yeah.
What's your intention with it? What's the climate in that area? You know, where's this been? Is this new? You know, there's a lot of stuff that I just, I suppose, do almost intuitively. And I get the answers by, you know, perhaps half a dozen questions and then a little bit of other connection and following the news and following what's going on and checking a few places. So it's nothing more or less than doing some homework, but then allowing that to marinate, and then when I get there, like an immediate feel, not a feel that's come through posts or websites or just conversations. Conversation's key, and then actually what's happening, and then I go from there.
Yeah.
And it may, because ultimately it's how you can be proud in the moment. And that's something that you've got to just be on. Like, I'll adapt and adjust what I'm talking about, because if it's going over the top, you can tell straight away.
Yeah.
And I go, well, what am I going to do? Just plow on? And the people go home and go, oh, well, I came and I didn't really listen and it's a bit boring or whatever, as opposed to going, well, okay, yeah, this is on, this is okay, I'll go down here a bit and then feel what's going on. And that's not to say that I'm crafting it to get an accolade or crafting it to get a thank you. It's about crafting it to get a connection.
Yeah.
And then if you get the connection, then you can push the issues and go, oh, well, what do you think about this and what about that? And do you realise that land use and, you know, I can push into spaces which, you know, technically around certain editorial things, I wouldn't or shouldn't really go. But it's not about provoking or breaking those political things. It's actually about forcing people to think. Although I'll rephrase that. Enabling people to think by opening some doors for them to go through, but not me drag them through. And that's the key.
And it's kind of like,
I can tell. I can go and tell. But what's that mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to just hear my voice.
It's kind of like where we started, how you know what the end story is, but you've got to weave that in a way that that audience is going to get something out of it.
Yeah, and that audience could be preppies. It could be year threes. It could be year 12s. It could be the environment group. It could be the local council sustainability team. It could be a community meeting. It could be a keynote at a industry dinner. It could be a presentation at a conference. It could be a workshop at a garden expo. But ultimately, I suppose for me, it's about making sure that the people that are there, I'm connecting with. Otherwise, what? Whether they paid me $50, whether they paid me my bus fare, or whether they paid me $500,000, it just wouldn't matter. Why go there?
Yeah.
I'm not in the business of just filling an operating list and saying, yes, I'll take some money. Like that, I couldn't do it. Not because I'm some ethical zealot. It just that I got no interest in that. Oh, I'll go there and do a talk and get paid $1,000 because you said you wanted me to do a talk and just talk you know what at the bar.
Yeah.
It's not how it is. I want to be pushed as much as I want to push and engage people to see things that they mightn't see.
And like you said, I know we get the same thing if we're talking after the film or whatever. Yeah. You know, you see people, like, things get triggered and they're like, oh, that's it, I'm going to take this to my school or, I'm going to do something. And that's what, because even if you're not getting paid, they're the things that make you feel good. You're like getting paid from the good feelings in the air kind of thing.
But
if everyone was there with their, you know, their eyes closed and their mouth open and some drool coming down, they'd be like, oh, good grief.
Yeah,
I might as well go and dig holes.
The point. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't care whether it's for a group of three or a group of 333. If you connect with those three people, their algorithm and their exponential potential will easily trump 333 if the 333 were not there.
Yeah.
So I can do things on my phone, broadcasts, and if a few people have got something out of it, it's a win.
Mm.
It doesn't have to have, you know, 50,000 reach. It's not meant to be.
But yeah.
When you hit the spot, it'll get the reach that it's meant to get.
Mm.
And then you go, okay, that's helped me to refine a vocabulary that I can then select and draw on when I'm in a moment where I have to swing the vehicle to the right.
Yeah.
And it could have been that little turn of phrase that I go, oh, boom. And then bang, what happens? All the eyes are back on.
Mm.
And you go, okay, we're back. As opposed to the switch is gone, that plant is going to seed. It doesn't matter what I do to it. I can wee on it. I can fertilize it. I can water it. But it's done.
Yeah.
It's finished. That coriander will be seed this week. And there's no more leaves. It's done.
Yeah.
And that's how I view those opportunities. And you've got to be supple and you've got to be responsive, because it doesn't matter how much attention you've got, things can twist.
Mm.
And that to me is, that's not a fixed and final. I haven't reached that.
Mm.
Like, oh, I'm there. Like, to me, I'm just refining it because the conditions are always changing.
Yeah.
Because I'm not just delivering a soliloquy.
Mm.
You know, I want it to be a two-way thing. I want people to be challenged and go, well, what about this? Mm. And I go, well, since you asked, let's
go that way.
Into that a bit.
Yeah.
You know? And then, yeah, well, I don't agree with you. Good. Why?
Mm.
Oh, because you said this. I go, yeah, I know I said that, but did you get that was, okay.
Mm.
Or, no, I still don't agree with you. I go, well, that's all right. Mm. Let's just go on and we'll see where we end up.
Mm.
And then they come on, oh, hey, sorry, I now get what you're saying. And it doesn't even have to be sorry.
You don't have to be sorry.
I don't have all the answers, you know. And it's a bit like anything. You can't get everything right all the time.
Mm.
But if you're genuine and realistic about it, and you know, this goes back to my capacity as a referee, because if I missed something, because as a referee you're looking every which way. I can look to the left, and while I'm looking to the left, you drop the ball. I look back, you've got it in your hand, and you keep running.
Mm.
And then, or I look away, and the guy opposite you drops it. And then I look back, and you scream black and blue at me, saying you dropped it. If I say he didn't, and you know he did, and I know I wasn't looking, I've lost you.
Mm.
And then I've lost your team, because you become the vector of anger.
Mm.
And it's the same with everything we're talking about in terms of storytelling and being able to use the positive mechanisms to get the positive A-frame billboard signage going, yeah, this is good.
Yeah.
But it can work the other way. So I'd never say, no, he didn't drop it. I go, I didn't see it. And you go, oh, he knocked it on. I go, it'll balance up. I didn't see it. I was looking that way. Stay with me.
Yeah.
And by being honest and saying, I didn't do it, I didn't know,
mm.
Well, then you calm down and you don't become an undermining,
mm.
sapping, you know, excavator.
There's so much in honesty, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, and we don't know everything.
No.
And if you just say, look, I'm, you know, yeah, I didn't see it. I don't know that. let's look into that together, or you tell me what you think, you know. Yeah. And that I think people just respect.
They do
much more than if you're trying to cover up because you're supposed to be the all-knowing person at the front. And that happens so much. That's what we see in politics and stuff like that. They can never be wrong.
No.
Yeah.
And that's, I believe, that inability to be humble, that inability to have humility. And, you know, humility comes from humus, which comes from ground, which means you're grounded. Yeah. And if you're grounded, then you can have humility and you just go, oh,
yeah.
You got me.
Yeah.
but it's not got as in, you know, one for you and none for me. It's just, yeah, you got me. I don't know. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
And I'd say that all the time.
Yeah.
And I even today I was doing this live broadcast and I was walking along and I said, oh, you know, and over here, you know, there's this great guava hedge, but it was a feijoa. But in that moment I said guava.
Mm.
But I can't correct it because it's done.
Yeah.
You know? And someone might hear that and go, oh, you know, well, he didn't. Yeah. But if someone said to me, you know, what was that? Because I can't, because it's on Insta, I can't actually input there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's no room for comment in the
live.
In the replay.
Yeah.
Whereas if it was on Facebook, you could comment.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I stuffed that up.
Correcting myself.
Yeah, I'm just correcting myself. But you just go, well, that's all right. At least I acknowledge it. And if someone did ask, I'd go, yeah, I stuffed that up. But, you know, I've been filming all day. Or no, I hadn't filmed all day. I got there. There was a minute. I thought I'll just do this little live. You're going through and there's a million and one things going through your head.
Mm.
And you pop something out wrong. I'm happy to wear that.
Yeah.
You know, but I won't deny it. And I'm really thankful because what that community-based refereeing has done for me is give me a thick enough skin, but I always correct that. And I say that because people go, yeah, I bet you've got a thick skin, and I go, no. That's the most important thing that I never allowed myself to get. Because once you get a thick skin, you become rigid. So all I've done is oil my skin. So then it's really subtle, supple.
Yeah.
And then when it's oiled, nothing sticks.
Yeah.
So I don't take it on board.
Mm.
And by not taking it on board, regardless of whether someone's blowing up black and blue, if it's not definite, I go, yep, not sure. And I can apply that to every part of my life. And it's definitely why I've been able to transition into a role. Because I was in the public light.
Mm.
You know, as a referee, you're in a public light.
Mm.
In media, you're in a public light. You're open to criticism.
Mm. But unlike a politician or something like that, it's kind of 50-50, like 50% people like them and 50% don't, you know, because they're from the opposition or whatever. Like in your position now, because you're not, like you're a lovable TV character, do you get much of that? Do you get many people, you know, trying to point you out that you're wrong or something like
that? There'll always be someone.
Yeah.
Particularly if you got to remember that, I suppose the thing I remember all the time is that I'm no genius, I'm no know-all, I'm learning every day. I love the fact that the more I learn, the less I know, but the more I learn, the more I connect what I know.
Yeah.
And that's more valuable than knowing more, because just knowing more for more's sake is like saying, oh, well, I'm a guitarist or a muso and I'm just going to sit and practice my chops. I'm just going to practice and practice and practice and I'll be, you know, I'll just get better and better and then. There's always going to be someone, if you're a guitarist, there'll always be a studio muso that will run rings around you.
Totally.
But is there someone, but are they capable of playing the music through the heart of experience. No.
Mm.
They play a clinical what you tell them to.
Yep.
You know, whereas someone who's been out there playing the circuit, played in pubs, have stuff, people screaming at them, have no one listening to them, or have a room full of people not listening to them and screaming over the top of the music, got there and had an amazing gig and been totally lifted to another level, or got there and been playing in an absolute shocking room. Like all of those life experiences, that's more important than being able to play every single lick without a miss. You know, just like I was talking to this collector last week who gifted his father's and his cactus collection that's 108 years old. It began in 1912, and he gifted it to the Botanic Gardens in Melbourne because he's now in his 80s and he can't look after it. And a beautiful example of succession. But succession before it became too late, when he didn't have the mental or physical capacity to make the offer, you know. And the Botanic Gardens have become the recipient of 3,000 cacti, 400 different species, to set up in a near collection of plants that you, many of which you can't even get in the country anymore.
Wow.
So, you know, I think about something like that, and you say, wow, there's an example of knowing so much about one variety of plant, but there's still so much you can learn.
Mm.
And that's how humble this person was. So after growing up with a father who knew so much about cactus, and then he grew up and he knows so much about cactus, I see someone like that and it inspires me to remain humble and to really appreciate that there's so much to learn in every exchange.
Mm.
And it's not just about 80 years of experience. It's about that capacity to appreciate, like for me, that chance to speak with him about this heritage. That was as valuable as talking about the plants because of the humility again. There was that groundedness. And if we aim at grounding ourselves, I think then our communication capacity is earthed.
Mm.
And if it's earthed, then it's going to come through the speaker and be taken in by people, because you're not flying around in your own self-importance or your own interpretation of where you fit in the world.
Yeah.
It's got to be in the present.
Mm.
It's not about whether I've been on television for 1 year or 5 years. It's not about whether I'm a garden gnome or whether I'm the host of the national gardening show. It's not about how old I am. It's not about where I was born or what course I studied to give me those validations. They're keys to access a journey.
Mm.
But it's where you take the journey and what you interpret in the moment. Me being with him in that moment, me being with that students in the moment, and seeing where the lights turn on because you're talking to them with hope, you're talking to them with respect, you're talking to them on the same level. Once I go in somewhere, and if I were to consider myself to be on another level, then it's all over. It's all over. Take me to the back paddock and put me in the compost, because I'm done. You know, I will never be better than any one.
And like anything. You said, you know, that the cacti story, all those years and still, you know, more to learn, or with a musician, it's never finished. You're always learning. And for you, because you're talking on so many different topics, there's so much to learn on every topic. There's like 50 lifetimes of learning. So it's never going to be, I know everything on everything I'm talking about.
No, it's that capacity to understand the threads that cross, be it cacti or bromeliads or composting or recycling or reuse or repair. The threads are similar. The story varies a little, but it's how you build confidence in the threads that help people connect through the switchboard of your understanding. And if you can do that, then you actually manifest greater understanding for yourself and the people at the same time.
Yeah.
Because they go, oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Or they'll say something to me and I go, oh, that's, yeah, okay. And it's got to be two-way. I just think the moment you become a disconnected, overly eccentric lecturer, your relevance slides. Because lecturers, the word lecturer has a responsibility that comes with it. And I prefer not to use that word because it's a bit too finger pointy. But it needs to be communicator. And I understand that in an institution there's hierarchies and so on. But at the end of the day, whether you're a tutor or a lecturer or a supervisor or a professor or a teacher or a teacher's aide or a principal or a guest presenter, you know, whatever it is, the capacity to engage in the moment is the key for me.
I think you've said it before that you're like a conduit where you're kind of linking all these different people, and you're connecting the dots or joining that web together of other people that are doing different things or working to or can work together or whatever. So that's kind of your role, is you're getting it. You're joining those people. You're getting those people connected through the television or through talking to them at events or whatever.
Yeah, that's true, because I think we can get very caught in our – it's very easy to be vacuumed into canisters and we like to put people in canisters because then it kind of makes us feel better. Because we go, I know what Paul does and that's kind of, yep, okay, good. No, that's it. You're done. That's who you are. That's the box you fit in, and then I know who that person is. And there's a certain part of that can ring true, because that's the sweet spot that you're operating in. But it's not a canister. And the more we reverse vacuum out of the canister and keep it on the arena, then we'll appreciate that we're all just going around the velodrome. And at times we're cruising slowly right on each other's tail at the top of the velodrome, and then there's times when we get momentum and we go zoom and come down and go speeding around the corner, and there's times when, like Stephen Bradbury, the whole pack slides out of the way and we get a victory or an opening that is a victory, because we suddenly see a clearer path and we get momentum. And it is about momentum. I think momentum is momentum is really, momentum and pulse is what we operate on. I mean, our personal rhythm is a heartbeat, and the whole planet operates on that heartbeat, and it operates on this ebb and flow and this pull and push from the moon, and, you know, the movement of water pressure up and down, and, you know, the tides in and tides out, you know, the seasons, there's the seasons across the year, there's the seasons across a month, there's the seasons across a week, there's the seasons across a day. You know, you wake up in the morning, it's spring. You get to mid-morning and it's kind of going into summer and the peak of the day. You come into autumn in the afternoon, and then the sunset is the winter, and then you hibernate for the night. And so take that also then on the week, you know, Monday and Tuesday is kind of the spring and you're getting rolling, and Wednesday, Thursday, you're pumping along and getting a lot of stuff done. Friday, you're starting to head into autumn, and the weekend is Saturday, and then Sunday you rest in winter, and then you come out again. So you can kind of explain those, that seasonality across beyond just the seasons, and our decision making in a project or in a particular process does that. And when you start to appreciate that ebb and flow, then you also realise when you need to push and when you don't need to.
That's so true about, like, everything and your moods and your mind, and because sometimes no matter what you do in a day, you don't feel like you're on top of anything. You wake up in a strange kind of a mood or whatever, and if you don't realise that tomorrow's different, or this afternoon might even be different, then you'd be always stuck in that unfavourable position or somewhere you don't want to be.
And it can inform your actions around what you're working on. So if you are pushing up against it, well, just pull back and just say now's not, rather than getting too zealous.
To force it.
And because once you get too zealot, well, then you're going to lose the people that you're trying to bring on board if you're pushing them at the wrong time.
Yeah.
So that's where all that earlier conversation about understanding and picking your moments and looking at people's responses and easing in and out of ideas until you find the right place. Well, that's something that I think we need to do all the time.
Yeah.
It's not just because we want to win something or because we've got to get somewhere, that, like, we can only ever refine that. And then when we have refined it to a point, we'll know now's not the time. I'll just let it be.
Yeah.
I'll pick it up when. And then you start to get to that point where you're just in the right place at the right time. And you bump into people. You go, oh, God, I've been meaning, oh.
Yeah.
No, oh, that's absolutely interesting. I just happen to.
Sometimes you're just working your ass off for nothing. And other times it just flows with very minimal effort.
Yeah. And that's, if people had the ultimate answer to all of that, well, then that'd be off
full steam ahead all the time.
When you actually reinterpret what you're doing in terms of it's all part of that ultimate destination, then you go, well, that's where I need to be at the moment.
Yep.
So I'm actually there.
Yep.
Rather than,
which is living in the
moment. I have to do all this to get to this place where it's going to be better.
Yeah.
Like, it don't get better than what we got now. I don't think.
It is the now, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Because that ultimate destination that supposedly has everything there, it's never going to be.
No.
Like, that idea of perfection, that's half the reason why we've got, I was listening to an interesting interpretation of everything that's been going on around virus management and waiting for perfection. is the fuel for pandemic.
Mm.
Because if you wait until everything's perfect, it will become disaster.
Yeah.
You just have to act and say this is the point. And sometimes we just got to do that ourselves. You got to say, no, this ain't working. I've got to act and change it.
Mm.
And then bang, their heads lift up again. And away you go.
Mm.
And your message and your connection, because sometimes it goes down to one bar. So you've got to shift, hold your hand up, move across the room, change the topic, bang, you're up to three bars, you're on again.
Yeah.
and it's those little moves. You don't have to go cartwheeling, but just a little shift and an acknowledgement rather than just soldiering on.
Yeah.
And saying, oh, this is a tough group, or this is a, oh, they just didn't get me or whatever. No, you didn't get them. Mm. So that's how I sort of look at that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's part of growing into a more effective communicator. But I don't get too lost in that definition, because the definition comes in the moment, and you can only get you can have the structure and the understanding of the structure, but then you've got to be in it and play with it to get that experience. You can kick a ball in your bedroom all day, but until you're on a field kicking it with a proper opposition, you know, not that it's an opposition, but in a proper game sense, that's where you get the ultimate capacity to go, oh, okay, let's steer right, let's steer left, let's change the narrative, let's do this. And that's, and you might think, well, why am I just banging along here? I've been talking about this for a while. But that's who we are. We're communicating beings.
Mm.
Whether you're communicating that through art, whether you're communicating that through your graphic ability, whether you're communicating it through your sporting ability or through your oratory or through your work in legal work, or whether you're a marketer or whether you're a land carer or a biologist or a botanist or, you know, whatever it is, we're communicating.
Yeah.
Everything we do is telling a story.
Totally.
Every fact is a bit of information, and if you just get one iota of that information across with a good story and a good engaging thread, then people remember it and they'll hang other stuff off it. So you want it to be like a coat hanger that you just hook it on them, and then they go, oh, look, I can actually do something with that.
Yeah, because I guess how often do we think of something that we've heard, we don't actually know where we heard it? It's always like, oh, I've heard this. And you do tell that to everyone because it was something that resonated.
Stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
And the key to it is not trying to tell stuff or to fabricate stuff that's going to stick, because you can get yourself into this position where you're trying to write something. You need to create the story that you feel, and it will stick because of how you project it, not because you stick a whole lot of glue on it.
Yeah.
Because trying to stick glue on it, you're almost being untrue to what you should be doing.
Yeah.
And it should be such a kind of conversational thing that people go, oh, boom, there's the glue.
Mm.
It sticks, you know. You can pick pins that you sort of go, oh, yeah, well, this sort of ties in here and that ties in there. But you gotta develop. This is what I'm learning. For me, developing a capacity to remain loose within a structure, so that you're not presenting something with an indifference. It loses that click. It loses the, oh, that's, that just came not off the cuff for off the cuff's sake. it just comes out.
It's more natural.
In a natural way rather than sort of looking at a PowerPoint and going point B,
yeah.
Point C.
Yeah, I needed to get these points across.
Yeah.
Seeing as you've got to find your tools for the Renew Centre tomorrow, it's 10 p.m.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Jeez, that went, I don't know where those couple of hours went.
Chatting, we can just go forever. And I remember when I did the blog with you a couple of years ago, I ended up making three blogs, so maybe I can make two podcasts.
He doesn't shut up. You ask the questions, so.
No, and that's what it's all about. It's wherever it goes.
Yeah.
But I did, I do want to ask because, like, you just said you spent 2 weeks away from home all over Victoria, and then you get home last night, then you spend all day out working with the ABC, and then we meet up and we're recording a podcast. It's 10 p.m. and you've got to meet your producer at 6:30 in the morning again. Do you ever get, and you love your job and you love your work and you love speaking to people, but how much of you just downtime do you get? You surf.
Yeah.
Do you still get to surf much?
Yeah, I get down and body surf a fair bit when I'm in town. You know, this time of year's, you know, basically from mid-Feb through till May, it's just like back to back to back to back because there's just so many things on, harvest festivals, autumn festivals. You know, you've busted out of February and the world's back on and there's talks and workshops and events and, you know, everything's going on. So, you know, it does go a bit back to back to back during this time. But, you know, that time is what it is. And if you want to be involved in those things, well,
it's going to be involved. A busy time.
Yeah. I'm about to head into a different period now where all of those events that I've organised have pretty much been cancelled. And that's really an interesting thing because I realised over the last 5 days just what is in the calendar, almost to the point that you take for granted that, you know, there's this and then there's that and then in the evening I'm doing that and then tomorrow I'm doing this and then that night. And you realise how much you stitch into a period of time, a period of 8 weeks. Suddenly you get 25 things cancelled and you go, wow, I've kind of put all that stuff in a row. But you go, as you're organising it, you just go, yeah, we'll put that in there, we'll do that, oh, I'll fit that in, yeah, we'll do this, you do that. But it's only when you untangle it that you realise just what's on and how much good stuff is on. And now it's not on because of the coronavirus and the uncertainty that has created. But you look at that and you say, there's a big moment now where we either take this head on and deal with it, but somehow maintain the capacity to not get driven by fear and start to break the community apart by wanting to protect ourselves, not protect all of us. And you see that ugly underbelly of selfishness come out because people panic because they haven't been given that chance to develop resilience because everything's just been on tap forever.
Yeah.
There's never been a break in transmission. It's like turn up every day, go to the shop, go to the supermarket, go here, everything's there. So you realise in these moments what we have as a community and what we've created post-war in terms of like a level of stability that when that gets rattled a bit, people lose it.
Yeah.
And they lose it quick. Mm. They lose it really quick. People that you'd think weren't quite stable get anxious. And when people get anxious, they don't know what to do because there's nothing there as a backstop.
Mm.
And when they see those little moments of, wow, we're on our, I'm feeling like I'm on my own. You go, oh, gee, you know, this is where that resilience factor isn't there because we haven't bound that together enough as a community. We've taken things for granted.
Yeah.
We've just taken this supply chain thing and to a point where we are disconnected. And because of that, we've got these problems. There's no backup, and people don't have a resilience firewall because they've outsourced it.
Mm.
And now the outsourcers chain control. Fails.
Yeah, yeah.
It fails. It's just not there.
Mm.
Toilet paper's not there. It's interesting that it was toilet paper.
Mm. Very interesting. Yeah. I almost feel like the toilet paper issue came about before I knew about, like, I knew about the virus, but before the virus story became big, it was the toilet paper that was the trigger for the virus this country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it just, I mean, something had to give.
Mm.
And it's just interesting that it was around toilet paper.
Mm.
And it makes you realise how unstable the situation is when toilet paper can be the manifest of this collapse of logic that, oh, well, I just better get as much as I can because the world's going to not have toilet paper in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's so absurd that it's almost funny, but it's not funny because the underlying message is one of, to me, just that non-resilience. Like, we don't need 200 spare rolls of toilet paper. and what's this next reaction? The next reaction is that it snowballed into rice and pasta and UHT milk and this and that. And they're all the signs of non-community when people panic because we should be looking after each other.
Yeah. Yeah, I did read somewhere that they were saying one of the reasons they were saying for the toilet paper was because it feels like a form of control, and because sanitation, I guess, is so personal, it was one of the things that people felt like they could, and I guess toilet paper doesn't go off or anything like that, but it also takes up a lot of space. Like, what these people have, you know, storerooms at home just full of toilet paper now. And then in 6 months' time, is there going to be all this toilet paper out on the street because people are like, oh, I haven't got room for my family anymore. Everyone's laying around on toilet paper. The third bedroom.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that you would, I think if you really, if the, you know, inverted commas shit did hit the fan, you would kind of figure something out. It'd be one of those things that you could work out.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, food, because that's what I started thinking about. I was like, you know, do I have stuff in my garden, and how long could that keep me going for? Or how, you know, with supplementing it with other things, how much is there? What nutrients do you get out of your garden?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and what do you get out of your pantry and your larder?
Yeah.
Do you have any fermented foods? Do you have preserves? Do you have all these things?
Mm.
And you know, that's the side of the toilet paper that the toilet paper dilemma. You have to not laugh about, but actually sort of go more towards crying that the real issue is those other things.
Mm.
And this just manifests, as you say, as a kind of fear and someone someone calling, crying fox.
Mm.
And then everyone just piled on.
Yeah.
Like,
and the sad thing is that it takes the supermarkets or whatever to step in and say, we're only going to hand out one, and that people couldn't get to that themselves, you know, because even if they did have to self-isolate, you know, that period is 2 weeks. But even if you said, all right, I'm going to give myself, you know, a 2 month supply, you know, you're going to be okay. And you should be able to share and be able to give that to somebody else who, particularly, you know, they've got a family or children or whatever, they're going to need some toilet paper for them.
And have a shower maybe.
Yeah, you'd figure it out. If it really did get that rough that, you know, there was no toilet paper, you'd come up with something. We're not that silly that we wouldn't be able to figure out back to how we used to wipe our backside before toilet rolls were around. Or go to Asia and the hoses.
All ends up in the sewer.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Whether you're washing it down the loo.
Yeah.
Or if there's a little bit there when you have a shower.
Yeah.
It's like.
It's just the most bizarre thing. I never thought I would see that, people fighting over toilet paper, when it's manufactured in Australia as well. And there's another supply, it seems, coming every day to the supermarkets. So, yeah, crazy times. And I hope that by the time this podcast comes out, that it's kind of something that we're looking back on and thinking, you know, we could have done that better. Or
yeah.
And it's not a thing of so much fear as it is at the moment, because I think the messaging definitely could have been a little bit different, how it was delivered, you know. Calm down, think of each other, you know, save the resources for the people most at risk. Yeah, and just like everyone's affected, so it's not like, you know, this is a class war or anything like that.
No.
It's just... Yeah.
The great leveller.
Yeah.
Toilet paper.
So back to everything being cancelled, does that mean you've got some cost of time for a couple of weeks?
Yeah.
Or it's still, you're going to be working, but not.
Yeah, I'll be doing Gardening Australia stuff, but, yeah, I'll have some weekends, that's for sure. I'm in the process of doing some writing, so that's actually really valuable time for me in order to reach some sort of manuscript deadlines and things. But that's a project that's been on the books since I started with SBS, so pinning me down to write a book.
Is this your plan or someone's asked you to write a book?
They asked me to write a book from the moment I started, and it's just been too hard because, well, as you said, when you're out and about every single day, I've been doing what I've been doing.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem. I'm kind of happy that I'm writing it now, because the person writing the book now is writing a very different book to what I would have written back in 2000 and, you know, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I could have written a book then, but that wasn't what I was about.
Mm. Is it giving it away to say if it's about you or if it's about gardening, or is it a mix of both? Or?
Probably a mix of both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
I'm enjoying the process.
Mm.
You know, there's a bit of, you know, once you enter into that sort of thing, you got to get it done. I'm kind of writing chapters at every talk that I do, so it's just clarifying ideas and analogies and concepts that I talk about all the time. And I suppose what I want to do is talk about, in some ways, some of the stuff that we've talked about tonight in terms of, yeah, what is it that drives and where are the connections and what are the touch points and how does what I do fit in? Yeah, it's a good opportunity. I feel like the time's right, and the fact that there had to be a pandemic to actually clear space for me to write. That's kind of not a negative for me in terms of the fact that I've got some extra time now is really important. Because well,
it's sort of like we were talking about before when the time's right, because if you fight these things, because I've written a chapter for a textbook and it nearly killed me. So a book is a massive undertaking, and if you were trying to fight all your other stuff and put a book together 10 years ago or 5 years ago, you know, maybe that's just how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I'm happy that that's how it's supposed to be, because I've been busy doing what I've been doing, and what I've been doing is sort of made me who I am at this point. And this is a good point to have a crack and share some of those perspectives and experiences. And it's nice to be able to say, okay, just keep going and that'll happen.
Yeah. Mm. Cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I haven't.
It's not something you talk about all the time.
No, I don't want – let me think about whether I want to talk about it. That should be all right, that bit. You can cut this last bit out. But, I haven't wanted to talk about it because I just don't want
questions about it all the time and, and then it builds expectations and questions.
Yeah, I don't want expectation. I don't do expectation.
Yeah.
It's not sort of my world.
Okay, well, I guess we'll finish it up there. It's 2 hours and 15 minutes, so I think we've got two podcasts there easy. And
you're like, oh, when can I go home?
No, that's great. Really off button. Really interesting. And as I expected that it would be long, because we've done this before. So
we have. Yeah, there's history.
It's always good.
We have history.
It's always good fun.
All right, thank you. It's been awesome.
Nah, you're a legend, and thanks for everything you do, and good luck over the next couple of weeks with a bit of spare time, and hopefully you get to go for a swim.
Yeah, the swims will be on, particularly because, you know, there's still enough beautiful daylight in the afternoon, and the water temperature is good.
So beautiful. You've got another 3 weeks or so of daylight saving, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
At least.
Is it?
I think it's Easter.
Yeah, somewhere around Easter. Yeah. Yeah, the Easter weekend. Yeah. So, I'll definitely make the most of that. I was supposed to be going over to Adelaide and doing stuff, but I'm pretty sure that's all going to be canned. Most of it has been so far. But I'm just waiting to see whether I'm still going over to an open garden. But I'd say there's no hope.
So, with any luck, fingers crossed, you know, 3 or 4 weeks down the track, hopefully we've got our shit together and we're starting to figure out what's going on and the panic subsiding, and this podcast come out and we've just talked about something that's heading out the other way.
On the back end, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, mate, I hope that's the case.
Mm.
It's a big X factor, but... Yeah, I'll have a little bit of time. I got quite a few weekends free, so I can do stuff around the house. Plenty of stuff in my garden that I want to do. I want to put more water plants into my pond. I was doing a good story with some people today who have got an aquaponic system with growing some pretty amazing sort of fish in it as well. And I'm just debating whether
You've got an old swimming pool, right?
I've turned it into a nature pond. I haven't put fish in it yet. I've got lots of – nature's really kicked into the pond. You know, there's all the little water creatures are in there, and the water quality's great.
It's amazing. I just
haven't decided whether I want to put fish in it or not and then increase the filtration requirements and – because the water's going to need to be circulated through something to get the fish waste out.
Mm.
which changes it. I was sort of thinking of it more as a swimming pond.
Mm.
But I just wanted to be a big, nice water feature that just looks good. The dragonflies love it. The bees love it.
Mm.
All the insects come in and the birds bathe in it, you know, and stuff. So I'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But that was kind of interesting to see the fish that are growing in there. They were really big trouts. And anyway.
It's so amazing that those water plants can keep something the size of a backyard swimming pool.
Filtered.
No electricity. We've seen ones where they've done sort of half the pool is rock and and water plants and everything, and the other half is just for swimming or like laying around in. It's just incredible. Yeah.
That's I've been building those in Austria for many years, so I know them really well. Yes, I got some time to play with that.
Mm.
I want to build an island to grow some plants on the island that I can chop and drop and help them, let them suck out a bit more nutrient as well.
And
I want to plant out a good winter veggie crop, maybe get another chicken or two, harvest and check the bees. Maybe split the native beehive depending on the weight in it. So, yeah, I've got a heap of stuff I can do.
Yeah, yeah. Throw I don't think you're going to be bored.
No, I won't be bored. There's no question about that, and that's not even talking about all the stuff that other people want me to do. And I've kind of got a little garage project that I want to do as well. So, and then I've also got don't talk to me about just general cleanup and, you know, all of that sort of stuff that you need to do regularly that sometimes slips a bit. But, you know, I love what I do.
Well, if you're really short of time, just call out and we'll come and do episode 3. And that'll turn into episode 4 as well.
Yeah, when you want to bolster the numbers, come and have a chat. There you go.
Brilliant.
All right, mate.
All right, thanks, buddy. You're a legend.
Thank you.
See you later.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks again for listening to part 2 with Costa Georgiadis. Please download the Fair Food Forager app and say hello there. Share your knowledge and learn from others. As a community, we can make a huge difference. I believe staying positive, having fun, learning from each other is what we need. And that is exactly what this app is about. So I'll see you over there. Thanks again to Ash Grunwald for the use of 180 from his album Trouble's Door. I'll see you next time.